From the frozen lands of Minnesota, two adventurers, Adam and usually Dave, battle the harshest internet connections to bring you another episode of the Digital Soup Podcast. Their opinions are unqualified, but the conversations are good.
All right, everybody, welcome back. This is episode 198 of the Digital Soup Podcast. I'm usually Dave, joined as always by my good friend Adam. I do have to apologize ahead of time. I have been nursing basically a migraine all day, been up since 4 a.m. So if I sound a little out of it, that's why. But we've got a very, very fun show. I know we were supposed to have The Revenant for you tonight, the review. I have been extremely busy and did not get a chance to watch it yet. So we decided to push that one more week. And tonight we're going to talk about some of the biggest, in fact, I believe there is 10 mysterious Minnesota happenings. So we thought this would be kind of fun. But Adam, before we get into that, what have you been up to? What's new? I saw you shooting a comet lately.
All kinds of stuff. Yeah, the comet Neowise is out, on the horizon.
Over Meow.
Got a shot of that. What's that?
I always, whenever I see that name, I think it's Meow. Meow. It's not.
Meow-wise.
Yeah. Neozy or whatever it is. I don't know.
Yeah. And then, again, apologies. No Revenant review today, but that'll be next time. Today we're going to talk about the 10 creepy, mysterious stories from Minnesota.
Right. We had to make a last minute change here, and I didn't even tell you what we were doing. So I'm hoping, I'm hoping we have fun with this list. I've looked at it. There's some cool stuff on here.
Yeah. So for those of you that live in Minnesota, you might really be intrigued by this. And for everybody else, it's just kind of cool, creepy stuff that you might want to hear about.
Yeah.
Before we get into that, though, we do have kind of a big announcement. And that is that, you know, Dave and I have, you know, we started this show with Jason, our third mic, several years ago, and we've gotten almost up to 200 episodes now, which has been phenomenal. So I've been here almost every week. Dave has never missed a show. And he's the one called Usually Dave.
Yeah, right.
But after a lengthy discussion, we've actually decided to permanently put the lid on the soup.
Yeah.
And for a variety of different reasons, you know, just kind of, we've got our other podcasts that are going, you know, we're looking at, you know, what we want to do with it, how the show has changed over the years. And we figured it's time to just kind of put a nice lid on it and go in kind of a different direction with our own endeavors with it. Mm-hmm. All good stuff. There's no like behind the scenes conflicts or fights here or anything.
Yeah.
In fact, we're better friends than ever. So.
Right. I mean, I think what it really boils down to is when Jason had to step away, the show changed in a big way, you know, and we really saw the vibe. Not that we're not enjoying what we're doing now, but it just isn't quite the same without our third wheel, I guess. I hate saying that. It makes it sound like he was an afterthought, but
we were a tricycle.
Yeah. Tricycle. Without the three of us, there was just something special about it. And, you know, trying to figure out what we want to do going forward. And it's while we like what we're doing, I think in some ways it's like, it's just, it hasn't quite spoken to us the way this show Digital Soup used to and what the original show was. So, it's one of those things, rather than try and limp it along and rebrand yet again and do all of that, we decided, you know, we both have our individual shows going, might actually have some new projects in the works. We'll wait and see what happens there. I'm
Jason
not going to lie.
Might come back online in some sense.
Yeah, some you point. Never know. I mean, I told you guys this in our chat, but I have really had this itch to try my hand at some kind of season-based, like episodic-based complete fiction podcast. Something like that, writing something. And you know, I don't have the resources to pull in a huge cast of voice actors, but
I'll be in it if you want me to.
Anyone but yeah,
it's I'm Herbert.
That's one of one my of those many characters. And here's another one. My name's Yvonne.
Yeah, we've heard a ton of these characters. Yeah, and no, that's definitely Jack something I'm looking at. So And, you know, I feel like that's one of those directions where I've never done anything like that. I mean, I know they're out there. There's tons of audio dramas out there, and I've got one I'm going to recommend later for you, actually. But the idea of just being able to actually create something from scratch, like an original story. Yeah. Got a few other ideas floating on too. In fact, today's list is another idea that I was also toying with.
Sweet.
But I won't get into that. Yeah, we'll see what happens. But
I think overall, I mean, there's only so much time in a day. Mm-hmm. And we're going to keep on creating stuff. We're still going to keep on hanging out. And, you know, you'll probably hear us here and there on different stuff. Mm-hmm. And I just have to say, and I'm going to say it again, but we're going to go all the way up through episode 200.
Yep.
You know, we're going to cap it off at 200. And I just want to thank everybody that's ever listened to the show. Yeah. I'm going to thank them again on episode 200.
But, of course.
I never thought of even getting into podcasting, you know, before the show. And here we are, 200 episodes in. I've got a separate side podcast. You've got a separate side podcast. And it's just been wonderful. And just, you know, our dear friends that have listened and participated and talked to us on Twitter and sent us messages, you know, from across the world, it's just, it's fantastic. Those of us that are those of you who have supported us on Patreon, of course, we'll stop taking your donations. So we'll still take the money. we'll make sure we get all that stuff squared away. But we really have appreciated all the support and everything. And it's bittersweet, but we're going to carry on and move on to other things and round it off at 200.
Right. And we'll, like you had mentioned, we're going to do our best to get Jason back here for episode 200. We figured we couldn't sign off and say farewell to Digital Soup without one of the originals, you know, without all three of us being there. We probably aren't going to do any kind of lists or anything like that. I have a feeling it's going to be a lot of just random fun and chit chat and memories and thanking, you know, you guys, the listeners and all of that. But we're going to hit you next week with the Revenant Super Review. Super reviews might actually move. I had talked to Adam, and I wasn't going to mention this, but I might as well bring it up now since we're kind of talking about it. I'm thinking what I'm going to do, and what we're going to do is try and, you know, probably about once a month still, bring in some movie and film review type discussion over to Faded Words on my show. And because it's all about the storytelling, it's really what we're both doing with Yesterday's Sci-Fi. Yeah. Yesterday's Sci-Fi and Faded Words were really focused on the storytelling and sharing these classic stories. But we also, you know, I at least on mine want to bring an element of film and in modern, you know, that kind of storytelling as well. So I think we're going to push that over there like once a month. So we'll still do that. So you're not going to totally lose the soup. You just have we'll to find it in different places, but you be already listening to Yesterday's Sci-Fi and Faded Words anyways. So, yeah,
but not at the same time. It's hard to listen to both.
Yeah. That gets confusing.
Let's get into Mysterious Minnesota, though.
Yeah.
Enough of our rambling about how our show's ending.
Right. This is still bringing you an awesome list. Now,
brought to you by Ranker.
Yeah, and this is by a gentleman named Robert F. Mason from back in 2017. Wait, now,
Freemason?
Interesting. Now, I didn't even catch that, but... But, you know, I kind of jokingly in the headlines here... said we've all heard of Minnesota Nice, but what about the kind of creepy, mysterious side of Minnesota? Because there's some pretty interesting stuff that's happened. So the first one here, and I'm not too worried about the numbering. We'll just kind of hand these off because I believe there's 10, but this one's listed more as just some amazing, creepy things. But Minnesota lawman Val Johnson was attacked by a UFO. Attacked? Now, some of you, apparently, attacked by a UFO. That's interesting wording to me because it makes it sound like the UFO itself was like, chasing him and, you know, shooting at him or something. Who knows? But I know a lot of you might be rolling your eyes if you're not believers in the, you know, extraterrestrial life. But Minnesota is actually home to one of the most famous UFO encounters of all time. This took place August 26, 1979. In Marshall County. So apparently Marshall County Sheriff's Deputy Val Johnson was on a night patrol on a rural stretch of State Highway 20, which is just outside of a place called Warren, Minnesota. And he said a ball of light suddenly appeared on the road ahead of him. Now, he being an officer, decided to investigate, drove his car towards the light to investigate further. Suddenly, the ball of light was inside the car with him, and it attacked him, hitting him like a 200-pound pillow, he said.
So it was heavy, but it was soft.
Right. So it's like just being blasted with this thing. The next thing he knew, he woke up in a ditch a half hour later with burns around his eyes. Both his wristwatch and dashboard clock had slowed by 14 minutes. His windshield, one of his headlights had been smashed, and both of his car antenna were sharply bent out of place. So apparently the police investigation reached no conclusions, but the incident became one of the most well-known and influential cases in all of modern UFO lore. Huh. What do you think of that?
So how did he know his wristwatch and dashboard clock were slowed by 14 minutes if they were both slowed?
Yeah, that's a good question, because in 1979, it's not like there was a, you know, cell phone to look at.
Tower. Yeah. One of the things people don't really realize, Minnesota has actually got quite a few UFO sightings. Like, mm-hmm. It's a UFO hotspot in some sense.
Yep.
So I'm not surprised. I've talked to people who have actually seen, you know, things like this. Mm-hmm. Not particularly a ball light 200-pound pillow.
Right. Well, that's what I found interesting. When I've never heard of another UFO encounter where it's, how would you put it? The size of this thing at first is ball of light on the road ahead of him, and, you know, drove towards it. You're thinking, you always think of UFO, it's a big spaceship.
Yeah.
But this thing apparently was just small enough where it was able to come right inside the car with him. I mean, picturing like volleyball size maybe or something, you know.
If you click on the link in there, it goes all the way to NPR, Minnesota Public Radio, and it goes on to say that, and I'm quoting, "I noticed a very bright, brilliant light, 8 to 12 inches in diameter, 3 to 4 feet off the ground."
Right.
"The edges were very defined."
Yeah.
So it went in there, and then it just hit him. So,
that's crazy.
Yeah, but was there anything else, like...
Apparently, it just
then he woke up and his eyes were burned. And
it just beat the hell out of him, burned his eyes, and broke his car stuff. And then he woke up in a ditch. See, what was interesting, didn't they say, what did I just read there? He woke up in a ditch around a half hour later, but somehow knew that his car and wristwatch were only 14 minutes slow.
I don't get that. Now, it also says his windshield and one of his headlights were smashed. Both of his car antenna were bent out of place.
Yeah.
And he woke up in the ditch.
Yeah.
So did he just have a wreck?
A stroke?
Well, something hit him. And he woke up in the ditch. His car's smashed up.
Yeah.
But
it's weird because they don't mention like his windshield being... Well, yeah. What did they say about the windshield? Was it cracked?
No, it just says his windshield and one of his headlights had been smashed.
Oh, smashed. So yeah, because you'd think if this thing came flying through the window, there'd be no windshield left.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Well, it's a ball of light, and who knows, maybe it can do that. Suddenly it was just in the car with him.
Yeah, that to me though, I thought this is pretty wild. And I've got to say, I don't want to, you know, infringe on copyright or anything. This is a photo from Star Tribune 1979, but the photo showing Deputy Val Johnson sitting inside of his new Marshall County squad car on the NPR page. I'd love to use that as our episode art, and I just might, because it's just one of those photos that's like, this is just a cool photo. Well,
there's another picture on that site that kind of shows the car in the same condition. So if you look at the windshield of it, it's like a burnt sienna colored sheriff's.
Exactly. Vehicle. That's a bad looking sheriff's car. I mean, that's bad in like a sweet way. 77 Ford LTD.
Yeah. So, I mean, the windshield's smashed a little. What the heck hit him? Interesting. Yeah. Interesting. Well, we won't know.
Nope.
Nobody knows. But let's talk about something else that nobody knows.
Yeah.
Is there really a Wendigo?
Mm.
Wendigo, one of the oldest monsters in Minnesota. And this is a cannibalistic spirit from Native American folklore. Legend holds that humans who resort to cannibalism, either out of desperation or dark rituals, will be transformed into a 15-foot tall monster covered in hair with glowing eyes, long fangs, and a snake-like tongue. These lanky creatures terrorized my house. No, ancient Native American communities in Minnesota.
Yeah.
And even some early white settlers claim to have encountered the hungry spirits.
Yeah.
So it goes on to say that as recently as the early 20th century, local Native Americans believed in and hunted for the Wendigo. Can you imagine hunting for this thing? Okay. Yeah, and it's 15 feet tall. It's covered in hair. Eyes are glowing, long fangs, snake-like tongue. Here's your bow.
And exactly. And when you look up the Minnesota Wendigo, because this the Wendigo isn't, I don't think it's specific to Minnesota, although it's very common here. But when you look up the pictures of this thing, it is terrifying.
Oh, really?
It's like, it's crazy looking.
I just typed in Wendy's.
Yeah. I'm looking one here. This would also be a cool. I'm going to copy.
Oh, man, that is freaky.
Yeah, it's like zombie deer.
This reminds bear. Me of, what was that movie on Netflix, that horror movie I accidentally watched?
Oh, yeah, what was that? I sent you a link to another photo there in the Discord chat. Yeah, what was that movie? I can't remember.
The Ritual.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah,
That's crazy looking.
Wow.
It's got like an elk head and an exposed rib cage, listeners, for you guys who can't see this. Look up, just search, Google up Minnesota Wendigo. And you'll see this. It's like a painting someone's done. And it's like an elk head with elk horns, but a zombie look. The teeth are bared like a, like big sharp teeth like a bear would have. Its rib cage is all exposed like a zombie. Big long arms with claws on the end and standing on 2 feet, like hooved legs, though, like a deer or goat or something.
That's freaky. You don't want to encounter that. No. Those that hunted this, mm-hmm. kudos.
Yeah.
So one of the most famous Wendigo hunters was Jack Fiddler, who claimed to have killed 14 of them in 1907. Uh-huh. Yeah, I got me 14 of them. Sure you did.
Right.
His last victim was a Cree woman whose murder landed Jack and his son on trial for her killing.
Whoa.
Their defense was that she was about to transform into a Wendigo and had to be killed to stop her from killing and eating others. Okay, mass murderer guy.
Yeah, but it's crazy. I know over in the Grand Rapids, Minnesota area, there's a lot of, the big golf course over there is the Wendigo Golf Course. And there's some of those legendary, Wendigo ties and names over in that area too. And I know talking to people years back, I used to work in radio and I worked on the marketing side and stuff like that, and talked to some people over those years, and they talk about, the stories of the Wendigo. And it was always something that was also like, this says, humans resort to cannibalism, transform into this monster. But there's also a part of that legend that believes the Wendigo is something that basically lives in steps between this world and another world. So it's like not another timeline, but like the spirit world, every so often this Wendigo will come step into ours and hunt and whatever, and then step back into his own world. And so there's a lot of crazy stuff around the legend of the Wendigo.
I believe it. Mm-hmm. That's a creepy one.
Yeah. But interesting that, he claimed to have killed 14 of these beasts, this Jack Fiddler, but really he was just murdering people. So he killed 14 people, essentially.
They were pre-Wendigo.
Right. Prendigo. Now, that's a terrible joke. That's what you call a migraine recovery joke.
I like it.
So, number seven, basically, the next one on this list, I've got Norse heritage in my blood. And this one, this one was fascinating. I've always loved this legend, I guess. They're the Minnesota runes that may prove that the Vikings actually visited the Great Lakes way before Columbus ever came to the U.S.,
Yeah, this one's interesting because there's been so many scholars that have examined it, and there's a lot of controversy around whether it's authentic.
Yep, so we're talking about the Kensington Runestone, one of the most controversial archaeological objects ever uncovered in Minnesota. It was discovered in 1898 by a Swedish immigrant named Olaf Ullman in the town of Salem, Minnesota. I believe that's more southern Minnesota, ain't it?
Salem? It'd be up by Alexandria, wouldn't it be?
Well, to me, that's southern. Remember, we're on opposite sides here.
You would say that. It's just west of Alexandria.
Okay.
Actually, it's more west central. Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
But for you, yeah. It's
like, yeah. For me, you know, an hour away from Canada, that's southern.
Anything south of Cloquet is southern.
Yep. So this is a 202 pound stone, which is covered in Norse runes that appear to have been carved by at least two different people. Like a handwriting expert, I guess you could say. The inscription on the stones purports to be a record left behind by Scandinavian explorers in the mid-14th century who came by exploring west from Vinland, made camp, went fishing on a nearby lake, only to return and find their campmates slaughtered, presumably by local natives, or the Wendigo. No, I added that last part.
They didn't count the Wendigo.
Scholarly consensus says that the stone is an elaborate hoax, remains a popular item of speculation for amateur crypto historians everywhere. One of the interesting things about this, though, like we said, is that there may have been a permanent Norse settlement somewhere to the east in Vinland, or it means that travel to and from Vinland was common enough that Scandinavian sailors knew their way around the northeastern portion of North America 300 years after Leif Erikson and 150 years before Christopher Columbus. So Vikings were everywhere.
Yep. Now, is this why the Minnesota Vikings... I believe so.
Yeah.
I mean, that's also why they have that large Viking statue in Alexandria.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And, you know, part of it is that, and part of it because Minnesota has a very large kind of, you know, the Scandinavian culture. You've got a lot of Norwegian and Finlanders and, you know, those cultures up there. You know, myself included, my family's got Norwegian and Finn in them. And so you see that. And so I don't know if the Minnesota Vikings football team was named because of that or in part because of this, you know, with that heritage there. But it's definitely interesting.
Yeah. You know, that one is interesting. That one's more fun to dive into because there's been so much study on it. So you can do a lot of research on the internet.
Yep. And there's, I mean, the link that they provide in this list brings you to a site that, I mean, it lays out tons of stuff. I mean, detailed breakdowns. Photos of, like, you know, handwritten notes and research and maps and, you know, all kinds of stuff like that. So, I mean, if I recall, this stone, this was this discovered? I know Swedish farmer. Yeah, he was just farming. And was this just something that his plow, you know, he hit it in his field or something crazy like that?
I don't remember the exact story, but he, like, kept it in his house for years.
And right.
Like, oh, this is cool.
Right.
Check it out.
Yeah, you know, the reason people think that, you know, there's such a thought that it could be just a hoax is because Olaf himself was Swedish. And they think it's possible since he did, like you say, keep this in his house or whatever for so long, maybe it was just a big hoax and he did all of this himself. But a lot of experts seem to think otherwise too, you know, archaeologists and scientists seem to think that this is the real deal. So pretty fascinating to think though, the Vikings from, you know, all the way across the world were this far, you know, central US that long before Columbus.
Yeah. That's wild.
You ever think about that and wonder like I often think, because, you know, up here now, we still have big wilderness, but everything's been cut. There's no old forest, very few real old forests here. And I often wonder, like, what this area had to have been like for these explorers when there was no towns.
Oh, just thick.
You know, like Lewis and Clark times or whatever. Yeah, there was no settlements.
Thick with three C's, maybe even four C's.
Yeah, I mean, just these massive forests and swamps and wolves and elk and bears, and, you know, everything.
Yep.
Well, just crazy.
So a lot of people don't realize that you can actually access Minnesota from the ocean just via the different bays, you know, starting north at Hudson Bay.
Yep.
And working down all the way through Lake Superior. And it's a wild path, but it's completely plausible that, you know, a group could have done that, gotten to Minnesota and, you know, ended up, you know, carrying on. They call it Land of 10,000 Lakes for a reason. I mean, they could, there's a lot of resources here.
Exactly.
You know, and this also makes me wonder if that's why there's, you know, towns like Vineland and
where is that town? Is that down by Alexandria?
Actually, Vineland, or am I thinking of Vinland?
Well, Vinland is what they mention in the article.
Yeah, I was thinking of Vineland, which is a different town.
Gotcha. That's a
good question. Anyway, yeah, that one's just fascinating because it could be true. And you know what? I've always wondered about that too. It was really the first European explorers to, you know, the natives were already here. You know, were the first true explorers from that Spanish expedition, or was it, you know, have people from around the world been able to come to, you know, North America via ship, but maybe didn't know where they were, or maybe they did, and I don't know.
Well, it's hard to say. There's you get out, you know, especially back. It's bad enough now, but you get out back in those days, and you've got, you know, these tall ships or whatever they're sailing on Lake Superior. It's going to look like an ocean, only freshwater.
Yep.
I mean, you get out there, you can't see shore in so, you know, a lot of that lake.
Yep.
Just miles of water. And so these people go out there, who knows where they thought they were.
Yeah.
You know, and then they found land and just took off. And that's some rugged country right at the edge of, you know, like the north shore of Lake Superior.
Yep.
Just forging their way in.
And I don't know enough about native history to know how far back, you know, the tribes go and how they got to here, or if they, you know, they've just always been, you know, right, or if they migrated throughout the continent, or
mm-hmm.
there's so much history out there to learn. But yeah, just fascinating to think that the Vikings could have possibly been in Minnesota before anybody else from, you know, Scandinavia or from Europe.
Right.
It'd be interesting stuff. Let's talk about a phantom pickup truck. So Gray Cloud Island, just outside of Cottage Grove, Minnesota, hosts the largest number of Native American burial mounds in the United States. Named after a Sioux woman who became prominent in the local fur trade, the islands host all manner of spooky manifestations, including ghostly coyotes and the spirit of Gray Cloud herself. But perhaps the strangest haunting is a ghostly white pickup truck reported to appear and chase strangers off the island, which is considered sacred ground by Native Americans. Why is it ghostly? It's just a pickup truck.
Well, they say it's ghostly. Oh,
some say it's driverless.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Others saying it's an equally spooky driver. And this is another one where, not on this site, but I did see some photos of, you know, kind of depicting what people claim to have seen. And it's, just like this old pickup, you know. And especially if there's no driver, that's pretty spooky.
Yeah. I mean, this is pre like driverless car stuff, but interestingly enough, just kind of scanning through doing a search for Gray Cloud Island. There's a Reddit comment out there. And they said, I grew up in eastern Minnesota, right by the confluence of the St. Croix and Mississippi. About 5 miles southwest of my parents' house is a small community called Gray Cloud Island. Mm-hmm. You may have heard this name bouncing around paranormal and ghost hunting websites. There have been a lot of rumors around this place. Things like ghostly lights appearing at night, a row of headstones in the cemetery that would number to 12 if you counted from right to left, but 13 if you counted from left to right. People being chased by ghostly white pickup trucks that suddenly disappear.
Uh-huh.
And rumors of like cults meeting on the island.
That's crazy.
Whoa. Yeah. Stay away. Maybe it's like Wakanda, where there's like, it's just awesome.
Right.
And they have this like holographic stuff that's keeping people out.
What I find kind of interesting about it though is that it's, you know, it's guarding this ancient native burial ground, which obviously the people buried there were buried long before the era of pickup trucks.
Buried with a Ford F-150.
Yeah, Ford is, that's how American made they are. They've been here since ancient native times. Even before Henry Ford dreamt it up, there was a white pickup. Ancient. Well,
it sounds like a creepy place.
Yeah.
These
make me want to go check these places out, though.
Yeah. Is it because you hear stories that something's creepy that it makes it creepy when you show up?
Yeah.
Like it sets that kind of preset mindset in your brain that this is going to be haunted.
Well, yeah. And you're already in that mood or that mindset.
Right. You're all keyed up like, oh, I'm going to see a haunting.
Right.
Is that a white truck? Oh, it's just that's Pizza Hut delivery.
Yeah. I could go for that right now.
Yeah, don't mess with those burial grounds, man.
No
Keep
way.
Off.
This is one that, like I said, this list has my mind churning on another podcast type project where thinking of, you know, like going and checking out these places and just really deep dive researching some of these individual ones, you know, like a full season about these play, you know, one place each season. It sounds like it'd be a lot of fun just to learn more about this state. I mean, I've lived here my whole life. A lot of these I've heard about, a lot of them I haven't, but they make me want to know more.
Yep.
It's crazy. Now, the one that I don't want to know any more about before we get to our recommendations, I don't need to go see these. And this is called something called the Smiley Face Killings. Now, this is a theory that began in Minnesota. It's a popular conspiracy theory holds that a national network of serial murderers dubbed the Smiley Face Killers have been preying on college-age white men in northern states for decades. What it is, the theory says that the killer or killers, they nab drunk frat boy types from outside bars and dump their bodies into frigid waters to destroy the evidence. Now, they always leave a calling card to taunt police, a prominent smiley face painted or drawn on a surface at the body's dump site. Most of the deaths attributed to the smiley face killers have been ruled accidental drownings, but one of them, the one that apparently led private investigators to kind of codify their theory, it happened in Minneapolis, was later determined to have, in fact, been a murder. So this is not that long ago, Halloween night.
I distinctly remember these.
Yeah, and since then, I mean, I know there's been a number of people that have gone missing, college-age men and women, but mostly men. They leave a bar, you know, in towns where there's rivers next to these colleges. They leave a bar, they just never make it home, and they find them a year later in the river, you know. But apparently this would happen Halloween night 2002. University of Minnesota student Chris Jenkins was kicked out of a bar in Minneapolis, vanished without a trace.
Poster.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. His body was found months later encased in ice in the Mississippi River, face up with his hands folded across his chest and still wearing his Halloween costume. Now,
folded across his chest.
That's okay. Something I don't remember hearing. And apparently his death was initially ruled an accident. How, I don't know. When you think, if his body was found encased in ice in the Mississippi River, face up with his hands across his chest, that sounds like someone pre-froze him, buried him, and then dropped the block of ice in the river to let it freeze there. Anyways, the persistence from his parents and a tip from a criminal informant got his case ruled a homicide. That's when New York-based private eyes Kevin Gannon and Anthony Duarte, both former NYPD detectives, arrived. They were seeking connections in another case they've been working on. Similarities in the two led them to uncover a pattern of mysterious drowning deaths involving college students all along the I-94 corridor in Minnesota, Iowa, and Wisconsin. And in many of those cases, that creepy smiley face had been painted on a tree or some other surface near where the victims' bodies were discovered. So, smiley face killer theory was born. They believe, Gannon and Duarte, the investigators, that a group of very highly organized killers are targeting college men across several states, have racked up a body count of more than 40 victims.
I don't see this as a conspiracy theory, though, really. I mean,
no.
Back in 2008, you know, there was an article on CNN here about the two investigators.
Yeah.
And they started seeing this trend. The cases spanned 25 cities, 11 states, and at least some of them were connected by a creepy symbol left near the water's edge, which was a smiley face painted on trees or other surfaces. And they believe the smiley faces were left by the killer or killers, and they varied in size with each face more haunting than the next.
Yeah.
And the most sinister was found in Iowa, drawn in red with devil's horns. And next to the smiley face was a note that read, "Evil, happy, smiley face man."
Oof.
And they said the message is that they're taunting police. So, I mean, this was a serious thing.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it was kind of dangerous, especially, I mean, you think that, you know, a college-age young man is, you know, physically pretty prime, should be able to handle themselves. But when they're completely inebriated and in whatever. In some of these cases, these guys might've been drugged. It was frightening to think about. Like, man, watch yourself, guys.
Yep.
Usually it's like, watch yourself, ladies, watch your drink. Always watch your drink.
Right.
But it goes for everybody. Watch your drinks.
Exactly. Well, in a lot of these cases, from what it sounds like, these guys, these individuals, they weren't even drugged necessarily. It's just that they were bombed out of their mind, you know, just a full long night of drinking, finally get kicked out of a bar, a bar closes, they go home, and they're stumbling out and they just disappear. And
people do fall into rivers when they're drunk. I mean, it happens.
Mm-hmm.
But let's talk about some recommendations.
And now, Digital Soup Recommendations.
All right. So my recommendation today is another YouTube channel. This one is called DIY Creators. Mm-hmm. It's by a dude named Glenn who makes stuff at his house. So we're talking like home garage projects, furniture, home decor. Right. The different thing with this guy's stuff, I mean, for starters, everything's very professionally shot. Mm-hmm. He's got wonderful directions. And the stuff that he makes has got this really cool modern look. And he likes to embed things like LEDs into his projects. Mm-hmm. So he's got desks and floating shelves. And
he's got that really cool looking platform bed with floating nightstands on it.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
His videos are stellar. He shows how he does all his stuff. And in some of like the newer videos, he actually has like a little icon in the upper corner that says what step he's on, you know, while he's doing his builds. It's just really fun to watch. He's already got like 2.5 million subscribers, but DIY Creators. If you're interested in building stuff and want some good ideas on how to make something that maybe you haven't thought of before, this guy's really fun to watch. Very informative.
Mm-hmm.
I highly recommend.
And he also, this is one I've followed for quite a while. As I've come to know our friend Vincent, you know, from Because We Make, and gotten more involved with the awesome people over there that are making stuff all the time. I've started, you know, looking at more projects and stuff like that. And his channel, I know, is one that has popped up for me that I actually was subscribed to already. And one cool thing about him too, if you like something, you see something that he makes that you want to make for yourself, maybe not every single one of them, but a large majority of his projects, he's got those plans available. You can go buy them on it's a site called Gumroad. But he's got the link there right in his channel. You can go buy the plans for any of these projects and make them yourself. And they're not expensive. I mean, some of them, like he's got a master collection, which has like 29 plans. That's like $80. But that bed frame we were talking about, that, you know, that floating platform bed, it's a queen size DIY platform bed, $9. You can buy the plans. It'll walk you through it step by step.
Nice.
You know, some of them, he's got a DIY budget desk, like a writing / laptop type computer desk.
Yep.
$4.99 by the plans. It's a sweet looking desk too.
Nice. And a lot of the stuff he kind of tells you how much it costs to build.
Yep.
One of my favorite ones on here, he's got a DIY desk under $50.
Yep. That's
and
the
it
one.
Looks
it's like
modern and awesome.
Yeah. White legs and underside with the natural wood. Yeah. It's very cool.
Yeah. Anyway. Yep. Yeah,
absolutely.
I like his channel a lot.
Yeah, he's putting out some cool stuff. So for mine, my recommendation, like I mentioned earlier, is another audio drama style podcast. Now, this was one, I can't remember what the other show, this is made by Q Code Media. I can't remember what the other show I recommended from them was. I think it was about sleep or something. Trying to think what it was. Yeah, Edge of Sleep was the other one I listened to.
That's still on my list. I haven't listened to it yet.
That was very good. And this one here, just the first season, I don't know if there'll be more than one season or if it's just the one, but it's a show called Baraska. It's starring and co-produced by Cole Sprouse, written and created by Rebecca Klingel. They did it's another one where the sound design and everything is just amazing. And the way the story is told is pretty cool. Now, this is from their site, kind of tell you what it's about. Sam Walker moves to the town of Drisking, Missouri one summer and quickly befriends two other kids, Kyle and Kimber. When Sam's sister, Whitney, disappears a few months later, he passes 5 lonely years wondering what happened to her. When more people start disappearing suddenly, the three friends, Kyle, Kimber, and Sam, take it upon themselves to find out what's happening to all the disappearing people and what connection the disappearances hold with the mountain outside of town. It's very...
Thanos snapped his fingers. That's what
it is. Well, it's very like... I don't want to say too much because I don't want to spoil it, but it's very... touches on possible like supernatural and kind of creepy stuff out in the mountains. There's this eerie noise that happens, and whenever that happens, someone disappears within a week. And it's always like high school age kids. And whenever anyone in the town hears that noise, they go to this place. It's like a party spot up in the mountains. You got to get ATVs and get up there and stuff. It's like a giant multi-level treehouse that's up in this thing, literally like two floors. You got to climb rope ladders to it and stuff. And they have big parties the night, every time one of those sounds happens that night, all the high school kids go out there and have this big party. And it's really, it's creepy. It's excellent storytelling. Some really excellent twists and turns in it. Super well produced. And the thing I like too is it's one of these stories where it's not quite like We're Alive. In a way it is, you know, We're Alive, you jump in and you're just with the characters. You know, there's no narrator. Right. You're with the characters. This one, you're getting the story as told by Sam, but he's kind of retelling it because he's in the future, you know, long after the events of this actual story. And he's recounting it to someone else, and his life's been very difficult, you know, since all these events happened. And but when he starts telling the story, it starts out like present time, and then it shifts, you know, and then the voice actors and stuff, like you're there. It's actually happening. So it's a really cool way of telling the story too. So highly nice. Recommend it.
Excellent. All right. And then this week we are adding to the Digital Soup Spotify playlist. Mm-hmm. I'm adding a tune called Rescue by Lauren Daigle. And this song, it's got a lot to do with faith and kind of holding on if you're going through something really rough. And, you know, we all go through those kind of seasons in our lives where mm-hmm. things kind of suck. And this song I really enjoyed listening to when I was going through some of that. And that's about all I really have to say about it. I mean, it's, I don't know how you'd classify it. It's not really a rock tune. It's just kind of like a contemporary pop kind of song.
Yeah, I haven't had a chance to listen to it yet, but I'll definitely give that a check.
Yeah, it's a good one. I like it.
Cool. Well, mine, a lot of people are going to recognize mine, I'm sure. And it's a song that Lynyrd Skynyrd put out called Simple Man. But it's the acoustic
Never
remake.
Heard of it.
Yeah, it's the acoustic remake version by a band called Shinedown that I really, really dig. There's just something about it. It's just the way he sings it. It's very powerful, stripped down. You know, there's no drums. It's just an acoustic guitar, maybe a bass, and this guy's voice. And just a really powerful song. It's one that I don't know why I've always, how would I put it? This song always hits close to home because I think of my son. You know, and whenever I hear it, I love singing along to it because it's just like one of those screamers, you know, it's fun. But I have a hard time singing it because I always get choked up because I inevitably, as I'm singing, start thinking about my own kids and, you know, wishing for them and stuff. And so just one of those songs, really popular, really well done, and just nice. One that hits me personally all the time. So,
you know, have you ever heard that Sierra Eagleson version of this?
Mm-hmm.
That's one of my favorite covers of Simple Man. But yeah, this one's good too.
Mm-hmm.
Excellent.
Yeah.
All right. And now away from our sponsors. No.
Yeah, I was just going to say I didn't have any listener recommendations this week. I don't know if you did, so.
Nope.
Nothing?
Nope. All right. I was quiet after Justin Bieber.
Yeah,
no one else wanted to add.
Jesse sent me a message, a direct message here a few days, like over the weekend at some point. So did you like that Bieber tune? And I couldn't even respond. I just wrote LOL. No offense, Jesse, but no, I did not like that tune. I did listen to it, but no, I did not like it.
All right. Us. Go.
Hey, super friends. As you know, we don't have any fancy sponsors, but we do have some important information for you, so listen up. First, if you want to keep up with everything we're doing here at Digital Soup, including how to find us on social media, all the ways to subscribe, and even how to support the show, head to digitalsouppodcast.com. We appreciate all of your support, including sharing Digital Soup with your friends, but if you want to do more than share, hit that button that says Patreon on the site and help support the show by becoming a Digital Soup Patreon backer.
Of course, Dave and I stay busy with our own projects outside of the kitchen as well. Dave is having creativity-fueled discussions designed to motivate, inspire, and encourage you along your own adventures in creativity with the Adventures in Creativity podcast. You'll find him at AICpod.com. And if you're interested in some amazing sci-fi stories from years gone by, I've got you covered with Yesterday's Sci-Fi. These are amazing classic sci-fi stories in an audiobook format. So what are you waiting for? Head on over to yesterdayssci-fi.com for all the details.
Man, that's a lot, huh? Well, just remember this. DigitalSoupPodcast.com, YesterdaysSciFi.com, and AICPod.com. Now then, thank you again, all of you that are listening, for taking time to join us every week, and let's get back to the show.
Well, that's a bunch of tired old wind. All right. Let's get back into our list of creepy Minnesota stories and legends.
Yeah.
We are up to a demonic presence haunting the basement of Minneapolis's Soap Factory Art Gallery.
Yeah.
So the article states that soap factories are horrible places even today because they involve the slaughter of thousands of animals whose body fats are rendered to make soap, mm-hmm. a la Fight Club.
Yep.
One can only imagine what sorts of cruel, vindictive spirits such places might have attracted in the past when conditions for both the animals and the workers were much worse.
Now, pause for a second here and just picture something, because this imagery just popped in my head as you were reading that. Now, I want you to think about what you just said. They involve the slaughter of thousands of animals whose body fats are rendered to make soap.
I'm thinking McDonald's.
No. Just think about that image that I just repeated for you, and then think about the nice smelling, clean, hip, kind of trendy Bath and Body Works.
It's wonderful.
Yeah, you walk into Bath and Body Works and then realize that all that stuff was made after slaughtering thousands of animals.
That's right. Slaughter yourselves for my cleanliness.
All right. So the Soap Factory is actually an art gallery in Minneapolis, and mm-hmm. it stands as an example of this. So, named for its location in an old soap factory that also made artificial limbs for wounded Civil War vets. Wow. The building's basement is famously haunted by a malevolent entity skilled paranormal researchers have described as demonic. Well, that's fun. Yeah. I do not want to go. But this deters the gallery's owners not one bit. Instead, they've cashed in on the basement's reputation by hosting an annual haunted house event on the site. Everybody grab your solo cup. We're going to go downstairs.
Get that next line.
It's so intense you have to sign a waiver to gain entrance.
Yeah.
Okay. Did you watch the video on this at all?
No, I did not. Either. So, and it says, who knows how much of what goes on there is staged and how much is genuinely haunting. What better place to hide a real demon than among a bunch of fake ones? So, so you're saying no road trip.
So basically it's a haunted house that you walk through, but they're trying to play it off like it's real.
It's real.
Yep. That's it.
Okay.
That's it. So no,
I won't be hopping over there anytime soon.
Yeah, no road trip for you? I mean, we could do a road trip, check out the Kensington Rune Stone and some of that stuff, but you don't want to go see it.
That would be cool, but for the hard pass on the soap factory.
Okay. I'll have to do that one by myself then, I guess.
Yeah. You can bring a phantom marsupial.
Right. And so that's the next one that I've got here. I've never heard of this. Phantom kangaroos invaded Coon Rapids, Minnesota. Now...
Phantom Joey's.
That's right, Archie. I've got the pupster with me again. But one of the strangest North American cryptids is the phantom kangaroo. I have never heard of this. It says the mysterious marsupial does more than just hop and box, though. It also possesses supernatural powers, including glowing eyes and the ability to vanish into thin air. Many sightings of phantom kangaroos occurred over the years, and one of the largest clusters of sightings happened in Coon Rapids, Minnesota. Over the course of a whole decade, from 57 through 67, 1957 to 1967, dozens of people reported encounters with the aggressive roo dubbed Big Bunny, who rummaged through the trash and supposedly killed a number of local pets.
Look out, there's Big Bunny!
He's in the trash cans again, and then the phantom kangaroo was gone. Yeah, after tearing up the trash, killing local pets, it was gone just as quickly and mysteriously as it had appeared.
Oh. Weird. If I saw a kangaroo, I don't know. It's probably just a kangaroo somebody left out and then somebody shot it or it died. Because rummaging through garbage is no way to live for a kangaroo.
Yeah, right. Well, and it's weird that clusters of sightings in Coon Rapids. I mean, And what a weird animal from Minnesota,
should
though.
Should be Kanga Rapids.
Yeah. Roo Rapids. Yeah, Roo Kangaroopids, yeah.
Well, we won't be seeing them anytime soon, so we're talking, yeah, like 70 years ago.
Yeah.
Almost, or 60 years ago. Yeah, that's Phantom or Kangaroos. I've never heard of that one. That's new. Watch out if you're in Coon Rapids. So a ghostly stagehand haunts the St. Paul Theater that hosts Garrison Keillor. So the Fitzgerald Theater in St. Paul, Minnesota, home to Garrison Keillor's popular radio show, A Prairie Home Companion, is the oldest theater in the state, and naturally, it's haunted.
Yep.
The entity in question is called Ben by the folks at work in the Fitzgerald, and Ben began making his presence known in 1985 after renovations to the theater's ceiling revealed a hidden balcony containing a letter to a stagehand named stagehand named Ben.
Doesn't everybody like a good stage ham?
I like a cured stage ham. Ben is usually quiet and somewhat playful, moving or hiding tools and leaving empty bottles of Muscatel in out-of-the-way places. But on one occasion, he nearly injured two stagehands by dropping a large piece of plaster between them from the scaffolding above. Yeah, right. These two guys are probably like, they dropped it, and they're like, it was Ben.
Oh, Ben did it.
Ben,
right,
Dover. When the debris hit the ground, it was debris from the ceiling. I doubt that they did it.
Yeah.
The two workers looked up and saw a hazy figure moving in the catwalks, who disappeared right before their eyes.
Whoa!
Strange thing is that no one knows where the plaster came from. The ceiling of the Fitzgerald is not made from plaster.
Interesting.
He brought his own ghost plaster.
Yeah, he's like, I'll get them. And I'm not even going to blame it on anything because it was just, I carried it from outside.
Yeah, I can't carry this anymore.
Oh, it slipped out of my pocket.
My ghost hands can't grip this stuff.
Maybe he was like, working on another building nearby and had to carry it there or something. And it just
maybe
fell.
Maybe these two guys were out of it.
Yeah, yeah. I had heard that one before. You hear that one too?
Yeah, he did hear that one.
All right, so this next one he apparently just woke up. My wife brought him down about half hour ago, and
I'll leave him in the show.
He's all right. So
he's a good boy.
Apparently, yeah, you're a good boy. Maybe we've all heard of the Loch Ness Monster, right?
Yep.
And so apparently there is a lake, Lake Pepin, on the border of Minnesota and Wisconsin that is also host to a legendary monster. He's getting vocal here. I don't know what's going on.
You're talking about Pepe.
Yeah. So sightings of this monster, nicknamed Pepe, date back to the Mound Builder times. What makes this one unique is the price on its head. So a local businessman, Larry Nielsen, offered a $50,000 reward to anyone who could produce conclusive proof of Pepe's existence. Though he did it largely as a publicity stunt to attract tourism in his hometown, that reward is still up for grabs. So you can go hunt Pepe if you want.
Pepe Le Pew?
Would it be called hunting or would it be fishing?
Oh, it's not a fish. It's a beast. It'd be crypto hunting. Interesting. I haven't really heard of this one.
Yeah, I remember vaguely hearing about something, but this wasn't one I was super familiar with, and I did not know that there was a bounty on it. You know, someone offered a reward. That's kind of twisted, but.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting.
Weird.
Wow. Yeah, a river monster.
Yeah.
Is it a hoax? Is it a misidentification of waves? Is it submerged logs?
Well, I don't know. I always wondered oftentimes with stuff like that if it could be just like a big sturgeon, you know, because those fish are ancient and they can get pretty big, you know, and so you never know if that's like a giant sturgeon that people were seeing or something like that.
Makes you think twice before jumping in, though.
Yeah, no doubt.
All right. So number one on this list,
near St.
Louis County, St. Louis County, where I was born and raised and where Dave still resides.
Yep.
Not to give away his exact location.
That's okay.
It's a hotbed for Bigfoot sightings.
Yeah.
Minnesota teams with virgin wilderness, especially in the northern parts of the state.
Yep. Uh-huh.
Making it a perfect place for an undiscovered hairy primate to hide out and harass unwary campers. I'm going to hide here.
Yep.
When I see a camper, I'm going to harass them.
And if they try and take my jerky one more time.
Yeah. What do they mean? Sexually harass.
Oh, yeah.
Bigfoot steps out. Let's see him. That's inappropriate. Okay, so St. Louis County, Minnesota has an abundance of squatches or Sasquatches to choose from. It's been the location of more Bigfoot sightings than any other area of Minnesota, with 17 documented encounters since 1973. Neighboring Itasca and Pine counties also feature multiple sightings, and together the three counties form the heart of Minnesota's Bigfoot country.
Yeah.
As with most other Bigfoot encounters, the creatures usually shun humans, though sometimes they try to scare them off successfully with loud screams or breaking trees. Yeah, I would say. On other occasions, they wander into campsites at night and throw things around, perhaps in some kind of a territorial display. Whatever the case, Minnesota is one of the busiest Bigfoot wildernesses outside of the Pacific Northwest.
Right. I remember.
Have you ever seen anything up there?
Not in person, but I do remember when I was working at the radio station still, they had a sighting out near Rapids, or was it out by Brainerd? It's somewhere closer to Rapids, I think. And they had come out and taken casts of the footprints it left, and they were searching. Someone claimed to have seen it and found the, you know, tracks in the mud and all of that stuff. So there's been, that was fairly recently, within 15, 20 years, I suppose. So, but I've never actually seen a Bigfoot. I did see a big bear on Sunday morning, but that was not a Bigfoot. Yeah.
And I think I've given my sighting before, because mine looked, I thought what I saw was more like, I don't know, it didn't seem like a Bigfoot.
Yeah.
Remember me telling you about that thing that was jumping?
You saw a Wendigo.
Didn't have antlers, though, as far as I know. But it could have been a Wendigo. You never know. It's possible.
That's true.
It didn't want to mess with me because I was a 12-year-old with a BB gun.
So. Right. It knew who the boss was. Yep. I thought this was a fitting number one on this list, being that it's near and dear to where we both, well, I still live and where you spent so many years of your life.
Interestingly enough, you should click on the link of the 17 sightings, because they've actually got the reports.
Yep.
You know, there's some near Virginia. There's some near Superior National Forest. There's some near Hibbing, Babbitt.
Yep.
All these towns that we are familiar with. Very interesting. I'm going to have to click through these after the show.
Well, on that list, April 2018, that link you sent.
Yep.
April 2018, daytime road crossing on Highway 73 near the town of Cook.
Yep.
That highway is the highway I lived on growing up.
Okay.
And Cook is the town where I went to school. So it's very close to where I'm at.
Oh, yeah.
I got to look at that one. 7 to 8 feet
tall, brown in color.
Yeah. That was spring. 2:15
p.m.
26th of April, approximately 2.5 miles south of where Highway 73 meets Highway 53. I know that area real well.
So the very first one on here, I just want to give you a quick. So this is the nearest town is Floodwood, which I don't know where that is. St. Louis County is the largest geographical county.
Floodwood's about south of the Iron Range, about an hour and a half, 45 minutes to an hour.
So this observation, the guy was deer hunting 5 miles from Floodwood on County Road 8. He said, I've hunted this state land for about 10 years with several friends and family. You could hear every noise in the woods this day when it was calm, no wind, not a deer in sight. At 4:45, a branch snapped, then another. These were not the small branches breaking, and I could tell whatever it was coming my way. I got my 308 ready to see what was coming towards me. I've been putting some bait out, so I thought it might be a bear by how clumsily it was coming through the swamp. I then saw movement off my left side and got my gun up and tried to get the animal into my scope to identify what it was. The color was dark brown like a moose, and as I tried to get a good look at it through my scope, it stopped about 30 yards away in silence. I looked around my scope and I could not identify what it was. It was like a gorilla on two legs, very thick and long hair. It must have saw me look around my scope. It was only there for a couple of seconds, and it let out a super loud howl. A howl like I have never heard anything make before. At that point, it turned and went back the way it came from, very rapidly, covering the ground through a thick swamp, breaking branches as it went. I would estimate it went 100 yards in 10 seconds, and then it stopped and howled once again, very loud, and it started moving again.
Wow.
I could tell it was going away from me to the southwest rapidly. My heart was pounding through my chest. I climbed out of my stand and ran to my car about a mile away through the cedar swamp with my safety off and scared to look back. I got to my car, jumped in, and tried to explain in my head what just happened. Until that day, I was an avid hunter of everything and never thought there was a thing like this out there. And now seeing and hearing whatever that was, I quit hunting and have not been in the woods much since. Huh. And never near there at dark.
Wow.
Whoa.
That's crazy.
Yeah. Now I got to read through all of these because that's fascinating. It makes you wonder.
Exactly. Yeah, this is one I definitely would want to look a little more into.
But the premise is so true. The Iron Range, like the northern part of Minnesota, is so thick with forest that you could, I mean, we've always, even as kids, my mom would always say, you know, getting lost out here it'd be bad. Because you could be lost for days and go in one direction, perfectly straight line, and not hit anything.
Yeah, assuming you don't start walking in circles, you know.
Right, which tech people tend to do.
Yes, they do.
Puppy.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah, this is a great list. I like this a lot. That was fantastic. I wonder what other states have.
Yeah, exactly.
Every state has to have something like this.
Exactly.
Their own stories. So actually, let's see. I would say, so this is over at ranker.com.
Mm-hmm.
Do they have, they have state secrets. They have other lists for other states at ranker.com. So if you're interested in checking something out like that for your state, check that out at ranker.com. Just kind of do a search through there. You'll probably find it.
Yep. And if you want to get real wild and crazy, look up a list like this for West Virginia.
Oh yeah. I bet there's a reason they put, what was that game that we used
Fallout
to play?
Fallout
76. They put it there.
There's a lot of stuff. Mothman and all that. Well, that's where Sheep Squatch is out there too, I think.
Sheep Squatch. Don't talk about Sheep Squatch.
Don't say his name three times after dark.
Don't say it.
Oh, awesome.
That would be bad. All right,
well, next week. Nice. Next week, we're going to talk about The Revenant for real.
Yeah, for
and
real.
And Dave's going to gloss over the cinematography and lighting of The Revenant. And it's true. You will, because it's fantastic.
I know
it. So, we look forward to that. And folks, if you're going to listen next week, try to watch The Revenant beforehand so you can be kind of in on the conversation.
That'd be great.
And then, of course, as we mentioned, stick around. That'll be episode 199. Episode 200, the final Digital Soup episode, is going to be the week after that. So we thank you guys so much for listening. Have an awesome week. We'll catch you next time.
Take care, guys.
Thank you for joining us, and come back next week for another cracking episode of The Digital Soup Podcast. This has been a Digital Soup production.